Hello, 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 and welcome to this edition of the Jolly Heretic. Cripes, a lot has happened in the last week, hasn't it, chaps? I mean, we've got the Virginia biography coming out and all the lies about from her. We've got Prince Andrew. Apparently, we can now rewrite history, and he never fought in the Falklands War. That's now doable now. The king has the power to rewrite history. George V, when he created that medal, said that people that commit murder that have it should wear it on the gallows. But nevertheless, they're talking about taking it away from him. We have the fact that Panorama, Mariana Sprigg will be into this, deliberately, manipulatively, lyingly, falsely edited a Trump's speech in order to make it look like he was inciting a riot when he was just having a bit of fun. And we have, of course, the shenanigans on the old trail. What's going on? What's going on? What's going on? Okay, good. Right, well, everybody, cheers, everybody. Cheers, Richard. Cheers, Paul.
Cheers.
Cheers. Capis, Saludo, Proust, Prost.
Scrub your nan.
Yanseng.
Have it sexy.
Yakida. Lachayim.
And any cheers in any other language that our viewers may watch. I don't know if anyone knows what it is in Korean. I don't know if we have any Korean viewers. Yes, I've got to remember. Mr. Quinn's poem. Yes, I would have forgotten that. So cheers, everybody. Cheers, everybody, and welcome to the Jolly Heretic. We're, of course, on the public house. Meets on Mondays at 7 UK time, 2 p.m. New York, in which we discuss space science and stuff and sort of psychology and art and stuff, which is increasingly expunged from our woke joke universities. There's hello, Acceptable Frog. Cheers, Acceptable Frog. Cheers, Rasha Mac Hampire.
Ed, you're very phlegmy tonight.
Thank you, darling. I do my best. And cheers, everybody, and welcome, and Prost and Proust and Herlig and Slanger and Slangervar, and welcome to the Jolly Heretic. Well, God loads has gone on. I know we were going to start off about the whole stabbing thing, but then we've just had this BBC. I mean, I get up.
I just saw too.
Sorry?
I just saw the clip too, the BBC.
Yeah, you get up in the morning about 12 and put together the old thumbnail and whatever and send out the link to your compadres, and then this happens. So it's a complete lie. I mean, I've seen that clip so many times and I assumed it was a single flowing clip. Where he just basically incites violence. And I thought to myself, basically, you know, you've got to march down there. I'll be there with you. I will lead you into the Capitol and we're going to kick some ass and then we're going to take our country back. That was what I understood. And it turns out that's not correct, is it, Paul?
No, it isn't. Could I just compliment you on your posh Spanish? It's the first time I've heard compadre pronounced like that.
Some of us dropped Spanish at GCSE, I'm afraid. We didn't do it at A-level, let alone get an A in it. But anyway, you were saying?
De nada. I was going to say that it's resignable, but how often Lipton and I do this duet where we say there are no consequences, but what the BBC have just done in any other era... Heads would have to roll. How can you have an organisation with a disinformation unit that is pumping out disinformation? And that's a matter of fact now. It's not just our, you know, sense that it's biased. It's demonstrable. There was a 54-minute gap in the speech that Trump gave that they've spliced together. That can't be an accident. It was deliberately done to give a misleading impression. And... They're getting more money for the license fee in line with inflation, and on it goes.
180 squids it costs now. Yep. Like 180 squids, and you have to pay it if you just watch stuff on the internet.
Yeah, and that's like a 2-week subscription to you, Ed.
Yeah, exactly. Except that would be 12 quid, but it's completely unreasonable. I'm just trying to see exactly what they cut. I'm looking at the Telegraph. It says here. They spliced together a version of Trump's comments aired by Panorama. We're going to walk down to the Capitol, and I'll be there with you. And we fight. We fight like hell. And if you don't fight like hell, we're not going to have a country anymore. In reality, the first part of Trump's speech, "We're going to walk down to the Capitol, and I'll be there with you," came 15 minutes into the speech. The second half of the sentence that was aired by Panorama, "And we fight like hell," came 54 minutes later.
Mm.
So, I mean, that is just total dishonesty. That is.
Well, it's spliced. You can't pretend it was an accident. That's deliberately spliced. And worse than that, if you read the article, the external advisor on editorial guidelines has acted as a whistleblower because the senior management ignored his complaints several times. And in fact, he said two of the chief executives got very defensive. Rather than say, oh my God, they've said, didn't happen, nothing to see here, let's carry on.
That's okay. Right. Do you remember the lady who's now leading NPR, what she said about truth? She's a white American woman, and she basically said that truth is no longer relevant. It's all about the storyline, They don't care about truth. You can get into trouble for speaking the truth. It's like saying that indigenous societies practice human sacrifice or slavery. You're not supposed to say that. J.D. Vance said that Europeans banned human sacrifice in the Americas, and I'm paraphrasing, and he got into trouble. People were upset, but it's the truth. Cortez banned human sacrifice.
Yeah, what an evil colonizer.
They also made out, it says here, they also made out in the way they presented it in Panorama, that Trump made these statements, and then the Proud Boys marched on the Capitol.
Yeah, and they marched an hour before.
They marched an hour before. So, I mean, that is just admittedly in a context of total crisis and breakdown and COVID, but that's no excuse, really. And general hell and fear and the stealing of an election, perhaps. Who knows? Or at least the appearance that it might have been a bit dodgy. They just put out something that was a complete lie. And as I understand it, clips from that Panorama clips were then used in subsequent documentaries. So there was a documentary, I think, by the New York Times, which is one of the most famous documentaries on the January 7th. Was it January 7th?
January 6th.
January 6th events. And I'm sure
that was a premature insurrection that Ed just had.
It was, yes. A premature insurrection is better than a premature ejaculation. I'm sure we can both agree. But that just means you get up and she's not wet yet. But anyway,
Ed.
What? You started it. Not the erection. I mean we're 9 minutes in.
Well done, chaps. Well done.
So time to stop in poor world.
Well done.
It's just absolutely manipulative, and it being the BBC, of course, it being, as it were, the kind of TV station of record or whatever it is we're supposed to see it as, it's spread everywhere, it's been quoted everywhere. It really does make him look like that's why I was so surprised by the response of Congress. It makes, when Congress found him not guilty, I thought to myself, oh, come on. I mean, he did kind of, didn't he? I mean, he kind of egged him on a bit, didn't he? But he didn't. And presumably Congress saw the full thing, the full unedited thing, and concluded that no, he didn't. But they wanted to publicly destroy him. It's absolutely appalling. And the BBC dares to have this fake news correspondent called Mariana Spring, who herself, by the way, fibbed on her CV about her experience, but anyway. And so I imagine I wonder what she'll have to say about all this. I mean, this is really serious.
I love it. We should use it. Yes, I love it. We should use it as an argument to sell the BBC.
We should use it as an argument. So the BBC, first of all, we have them covering up the Jimmy Savile thing. Remember that? Do people forget that? So they knew all about what was going on. They were told all about what was going on, and they didn't run it.
And he still never replied to my letter, bastard.
He never replied. I wrote twice. I wanted to be an astronaut, and I forget what it was the second time.
How badly did you...
Sorry, Richard, what are you saying?
Go on.
Barry, is it Weiss or Weiss? Barry is now at CBS News. He's a news editor. That's interesting.
Why?
She's anti-war. She's anti-war. What's your problem? She's anti-war. She's starting the free press. And she's going to shake up the whole side CBS.
Oh, I see. Right, I didn't know that. I have to know your kind of priors in order to understand what you're talking about. Like, I don't know.
Yeah, I love Barry and I love Israel.
Ew.
That's good. That's good news. That's good news, Lipson. That's
Zionist whore.
Are you one of those Ethiopian Jews, Lipson?
No. Maybe I'm
Show
Igbo,
us the Ark dude. Of the Covenant.
Maybe Igbo. Igbo's claimed to be Jewish too.
No. Well, they were there. It was they're Israelites, really, aren't they? Rather than Jews. People forget that distinction. There's the Jews who are from Judah, or Judea, and there's the Israelites that are everybody else. So. The Ethiopian Jews are Israelites. They're one of the lost tribes of Israel, aren't they? There's people in, I think it's Vietnam, that reckon they're Jewish. They reckon they're one of the lost tribes. Again, not Jewish, Israelite. They reckon they're one of the lost tribes of Israel. If we have anybody watching from one of the lost tribes of Israel, please leave a comment, and that would be very interesting. If you're from a lost tribe of Israel, do get in touch. But yeah, so it's a complete fib. It's a complete lie. And as Paul says, in any other circumstance, if this had been found out more close to the time, I mean, heads would absolutely roll. But I think they still should. I mean, someone is responsible for this. Someone signed this off. Someone said, yes, this is incredibly misleading because it's 15 minutes in and then 54 minutes later. It's supremely misleading. It's about as accurate historically as, you know, The Crown. Which should be banned, but yeah, let's let it go. It backs up our idea that Trump is a tyrant and a revolutionary and is anti-democratic and whatever. Just let it go. It's absolutely astounding. It's astounding. Richard,
puts me in mind of the incident with the great and towering intellectual, public intellectual that is Sam Harris. What a high IQ. Sovereign-minded gentleman he proved himself to be, when he said that he basically didn't care what was on Hunter Biden's laptop. He didn't care if Hunter Biden had the bodies of children in his basement because the truth didn't matter as long as you can defeat your enemy. Do you remember that incident, that interview where he said that? And it puts me in mind of that. There seems to be this sort of a stance that's developed over the years, this illiberal, liberal left-wing view that the end justifies the means, and they've totally accepted Machiavellianism as an acceptable way of doing politics. So yes, the truth doesn't matter. What matters is that we score points for our side, and we do that by effectively attacking the enemy, and that includes everything and anything, you know, deception, poisoning the wells, killing the kids, whatever you want. It's all okay as long as we defeat the enemy. And they're unhinged. They've unmoored themselves from truth. And I don't actually think, in all of the games you can play in politics, I don't think that will work out for them in the long term.
No, not in the long term, but in the short term, it's worked pretty well, hasn't it? Just lie and lie and lie, and we know what about, and I can barely even safely say some of these lies here on YouTube, and just hope it'll be all right, and it will be for a significant period of time until eventually it unravels.
Can I add something to that? I wasn't politically engaged in 2020, but I slowly became more and more politically engaged, and more pro-Trump, the more they attacked him. So there must be other people like me who are a faction of the population who were not pro-Trump, who thought he was a bit of a clown, who then became pro-Trump as a result of these kinds of strategies. It won't be a huge percentage, but there must be other people like me who were indignant and a bit outraged at what was he was clearly being treated unfairly in the press. Well, and because of that, I was readier to listen to him.
Yeah, sorry, Richard, the derangement syndrome, Trump derangement syndrome, is a cousin to Brexit derangement syndrome, and ultimately it's all reduced to, irrespective of what side of the spectrum politically you're on, losers' consent has left the lexicon. After Brexit, they refused to accept they lost. It was childish behaviour. Whether it was a good idea to leave or not is irrelevant. You have a democratic vote, you abide by it. Democracy in America, I fear for it in the sense that it's been politicised. Is it California and another state have now made it illegal to show or to ask for photo ID when you vote? So they're facilitating fraud. And there's another state, though, I think have done the same. So they're actively at state level facilitating electoral fraud, which is an absolute disgrace.
But it's your point. Wouldn't they only do that if they thought it was left-wingers who would engage in fraud? It's a covert it's a covert condemnation. They're saying our side, the right won't lie, but our side will, so help them.
Yeah, but they don't see that as a condemnation. They don't. They're so amoral because the end justifies the means that by any means possible, they will take an election.
And they have the cognitive dissonance as well to be able to come up with the justification. Oh, no, asking for a photo ID discriminates against people that don't have photo ID or whatever. You know, that's,
well,
that's
it is. It's immensely discriminating because it discriminates against cheating bastards.
It discriminates against people that don't have photo ID, and the only reason not to have photo ID is if you're in the country illegally, basically.
It's literally illegal to walk around American streets without a photographic ID on you. You can get nicked for that. You have to have a photo ID on you. So I don't even know how the fuck this works. If I go to America, well, most countries in the world, France is the same, Spain is the same, Thailand, you must be carrying photo ID on you. It's only the UK where you don't have to do that. So how does that work? It's illegal to not have photo ID on you unless you are voting for the next political party to come into power. It's a nonsense, total nonsense.
But
I've wandered around America without a photo ID on me. I didn't.
You shouldn't. You shouldn't.
That's because you'd be arrested if they saw your photograph, Ed.
If they caught you,
I'd be arrested for the sexiest photograph in the United States.
Facts. Big facts.
Facts.
It's okay. I don't know how many of you were following this story, but in America, there are individuals who are public sector officials who are not legal in the country. They work in government. What is Paul doing?
Sorry, I'm not wearing any underpants tonight.
Yes, yeah, so there are people in the federal government who are not in the country legally, but they work. They're federal employees, and I'm not making this up.
That pisses me off, Lipton, because I'm paying thousands of dollars and doing a lot of work right now to get my bastard American visa sorted out because I got caught with steroids at the border. So I have to reapply, and they want everything. They want bank records. They want photographs of my assets and
the address of your dealer. It's ridiculous.
Ridiculous what they want.
But I blame Donald Trump. Do you know why? Because Donald Trump immigration policy is not partial enough. It should be partial. It should literally say, this is the policy of Donald Trump. I want to import high-quality immigrants from Western countries. I want people like Richard, who are not criminals. The third world people can stay in the third world.
Well, I don't know about not criminal. I don't know if you've seen my interviews with them, basically, yeah. But he's not going to get that. But anyway, look, where were we? What were we talking about? We were on something interesting. Yeah, the sexiest photograph in the United States. And so that's why I can't carry it around because it's so hot that it burns a hole in my pocket. That's how hot it is, Paul.
Is that? What the fuck is that?
It's Paul's strange penis.
No, you know, I'm doing a Bible section on my channel. Yeah. So I've got this massive snake for when we get into snake handling. I'm going down the evangelical route.
I'm glad to hear it.
I've got a snake somewhere that I used many years ago, like 2020 or something, or 2019, I did a video on Americans are religious, and I pretended to be a snake handler in it.
Yeah, it's not as big as this one, Ed. Go on, let's compare snakes.
No, the nearest I could find that is comparably rude is this that I got in Amsterdam. It's a penis painted.
Oh, go on! Explain it to us, Ed.
Yeah, it's a cock.
I didn't do semiotics at university. Could you explain it?
It's symbolic, right? So,
it's not. It's not an actual cock that's been removed from a human.
I didn't have to buy a cock.
You haven't even taken the label off it.
No, I thought the label was funny. It says, "Don't be a dick. Give me a hug."
Oh, I'll let you off them.
In Finland, they call this bit the glands. They call this bit the mansikka because it's red. And if you don't,
oh, fancy you, you don't know you don't know the name of your own address, but you know the bit for the glands on a penis as you get into a taxi.
So they call this the strawberry. This bit, Because as I say,
and you say to the taxi driver, "How much is it?" And then you use that Finnish word, and that's how it starts.
Or mansikka.
Yeah.
Well, they do actually have a saying in Finnish, "maksa mansikka," which means that it costs as much as strawberries, i.e., it's expensive. So if you want to say something's expensive, you say it costs the same as strawberries, "maksa mansikka."
Isn't that confusing though?
Not really. No.
Well, what if you're talking about your gland?
No, because yeah, that is confusing. And equally, the word "muna" is egg. It means eggs, but it also means testicles. So what you'll notice,
grocery shopping in Finland is a nightmare.
To avoid that problem, what Finns will always say is they'll always say "kanamuna," which means chicken eggs, because eggs itself means testicles. But then "kanamuna," chicken eggs.
Punani.
Or you say
Punani in Jamaica means vagina. Punani pampers. In England, there's a pampers called punani, and in Jamaica, punani means vagina.
There's no pampers called punani in England. Stop it.
Yes. I watch ads. It's called punani. Well, something like that. Punani.
It's not called punani.
Punani pampers.
It's poo.
Richard. P-O. Richard. Richard. Leave Lipton alone. He's applying for a job at the BBC News section.
There's no fucking punani pampers in the UK. What are you saying?
Yeah, I think it's P-O-O-H, punani. In Jamaica, it's punani.
Punani.
Yeah.
Punani. Like nanny yeah. low.
Like an incontinent nanny low, exactly.
Okay. Punani, yes, okay. It does sound like punani. I'm sorry.
In Finnish, the word for vagina is pimpu.
That's nice. It's puchaliska in Romanian.
Puchaliska.
It's cute, isn't it?
Ice cube, yeah, puchaliska.
Show us your puchaliska. Let's have a little look.
Puchaliska.
Anyway, back to...
Let's talk about that girl. The girl who lived somewhere she lived in one of those Islamic countries, and they wanted to kill her, and now she lives in the UK or somewhere in the West, and she was on TV recently criticizing the British. Maybe she should go back home. The Malala Yousaf, whatever, that girl.
Oh, but sorry, to add to what you've just said, Lipton, there was a woman in Denmark who saw Pride stuff in public and then is going to go back to Syria because she's so offended.
Okay, good. Good. Syria under an expense in Denmark. They're a welfare expense and a criminal expense, so she should go back home.
I've always said, though, it will be interesting, you know, fast forward a few years, when what will happen with this, to use the terminology, the intersection of Islamism and pride ideology. That's never really been resolved, has it?
Oh, it will be. Yeah, there'll be people dropping from buildings like flies on that day.
Well, that doesn't make any sense, Richard, because flies can just fly, can't they?
Fuck.
If it flies drop,
not if they've flown into a window.
If it drops from a building, the first thing it will think of is to flap its wings.
It'll think, oh, fuck, and then it'll go, oh, no, I've got these wings.
Oh, yeah, it'll be
like,
ah, oh, no, I wish I wasn't gay. Oh,
what?
Wait.
Ed, what about flies that go into windscreens? They're windows and they just
There's
splat.
There's no way, Richard, you would execute a gay fly by throwing it off a building. That would be stupid.
No, I think you're right. I think that would be it. Well, it would just escape. It would be like, oh, thanks.
Yeah, it would be like the Alan Partridge.
Thank
escape,
you, because it's a sassy gay fly. Don't kill me. How are you going to kill me? Off the building. Oh, no.
Richard, David Lammy will have you in the Department of Justice, given your knack for solving criminal issues.
Yeah, all you're going to get under Richard is this just huge amount of gay flies all buzzing around being all gay.
No, I wasn't saying I want the Islamists to do this to our gay friends. I just think it's ironic that when the time comes, and if their agenda is fulfilled and brought to its logical conclusion, then that day will surely arise.
Yes, right. I like a fly arises. Yeah. So, yeah. It's not a stable coalition.
The gays will blame white people. That's what they always do. This lady, she went to Haiti and she was raped, and she blamed white racism. They will blame white men. They will blame white men. They're not going to blame the Muslims. They're going to blame white men. That's what they always do.
Yeah, someone said Carlotta our barmaid is making a very good point that we haven't actually talked about the train attack yet, and we're half an hour in.
That's because you're moderating, Ed. Hasn't she watched the programme before?
she is a moderator. She's one of the mods. She's got a special spanner next to her name.
Oh, so right.
She's allowed to moderate the chat. But yeah, this train thing, again, just like cock up by the police. So you arrest two people, one of whom is Caribbean and one of whom is African. And if it's two people, then that implies either it's clearly a terrorist attack or it's some, what do you call it, a folie à deux, where two people just go mad and together, like that case, those Swedish twins on the motorway 20 years ago. do you remember that? But then suddenly they realised that no, one of the black guys they arrested didn't do anything. So they let him go, and so now it was just one person who was, I forget whether he was the Caribbean one or the African one, born in the UK.
I think if I stabbed a load of people up with a mate on a train, I wouldn't think he'd let him go. I think he'd keep hold of him for a little bit, you know.
But you don't know they were mates. You don't know they were mates.
Oh, he was accidentally arrested next to him because of profiling.
Or just ploddish incompetent.
Oh, okay.
I think that probably is it, yeah.
One of those words was redundant.
Nice. I was like... the police stupidity. We don't need the word stupidity. We're just the police.
Yeah.
So they weren't associates. There was just two black men, and they picked up the other black guy in the carriage and said, "Well, you were here, so guilty."
Yeah. He was just sitting there being black, and they arrested him, and he didn't do anything. He was just there, and then the other racist guy, the younger guy, he was the person saying like the devil will not triumph, and really obviously schizophrenic things.
So, was it the Jamaican or the African who was doing the stabbing?
I don't know.
It wasn't he was described as Afro-Caribbean, and he's the guy they released.
Oh, okay. So it wasn't our friends from the Caribbean, Lipton. You're off.
Yeah, but as Lipton was saying before the show, there are. Well, we get to who I blame for this, which is ultimately Enoch Powell. So I don't know, everyone's familiar with the Rivers of Blood speech.
Yes.
And no one's familiar with the Water Tower speech in 1961, when Enoch Powell was health minister, and he did a speech condemning these asylums with their big water towers, saying it's very cruel to have asylums and they should shut them down and there should be care in the community. That is what Enoch Powell, your hero, that is what I'm saying that to the audience. That is what Enoch Powell said in 1961. And there was so much resistance to this insane idea of having insane people live in the community and kind of look after themselves or be looked after by social workers. It was considered such a silly, disruptive, ludicrous thing that it wasn't until 1986, by which time Enoch Powell only had like one more year left as a member of parliament, 1986, that they finally started to institute this policy. And it wasn't until 1990 under John Major that it really, really sort of took off. And then naturally it's ludicrous. And you just have this situation where mad people can wander around the community. And
well, except that's one side of the equation, but the madness, yes, is a genuine problem, but there's the knife issue, and the knife issue is largely not being addressed because stop and search is allegedly racist. So it would be possible to have mad people with knives, but at least they'd get stopped because they'd be getting checked more often. But
I agree
not.
With Paul. Paul is right.
Can I just finish the point? What one thing that struck me recently was all of you will be familiar with this notion whereby when they're discussing the grooming gangs, the commentators who want to avoid it come out, they pretend they don't understand the concept of per capita and disproportional crimes amongst certain sections. Yeah, they always say it's wrong to label people of a particular ethnicity. Well, I think there are layers to stereotypes that are often ignored. Stereotypes being applied immediately are obviously wrong. But in a certain context, stereotypes are essential. So is it in medicine? they work on percentages, don't they? They work on, in a sense, on stereotypical responses and stereotypical treatments.
All of life works on stereotypes. Yeah. All of work, you can't drive a car without judgment, which is prejudice and stereotyping. You can't do anything.
Yeah.
You can't cross the road. Stereotypes are pop psychology, and we have stereotypes because that's how you navigate life. That's how you work life. You divide life up into manageable chunks that allow correct predictions to be made.
So my point would be, don't stereo people from the get-go, but with sufficient context, always be willing to resort to a stereotype for all the reasons you're saying.
Exactly. Like, my first reaction to meeting Paul was Scouser, violent, dangerous. That was true.
You hid your wallet, and you were right to.
Also, you know, a reasonable amount going on upstairs for a Scouser. So my stereotypes were confounded. My attitude when I first met Richard was, he's got an earring or something. But he wasn't.
I've never had a fucking earring in my life. What are you talking about, you lunatic?
Oh, but you don't deny having had a gay experience.
I'd rather have a gay experience than a fucking earring. It's less gay to suck a man's cock than for a man to walk around with a fucking earring in. I'd wear that experience with pride.
It was something like that.
Paul, I have a secret. The secret is only for Paul. In psychology, there is a literature. It is known as stereotype accuracy. Most stereotypes are true.
Well, that's why the stereotype.
His name is Lee Yusim. Mm. That's the expert.
Yeah, Lee Yusim, no sane person buys hubcaps and then invites me round to their house. It's stupid.
Another secret for Paul. I don't know how to say this again, Paul, but in the 1890s and early 1900s, people in America used to complain that a certain type of individual would take public transportation and he would make a lot of noise. And that's why they got a certain law. They were loaded.
Yeah, steady on, Lifton, but we agree.
Control him, Edward.
Lifton, you didn't give that away at all. Well done.
No, that was subtle. That was very subtle, Lifton. Well done. That was subtle, as is a mark of your race. Yes, stereotypes, I'm afraid, are broadly true, and it's very interesting and fascinating. It's very fascinating when people confound stereotypes. So, you know, you get someone that, I don't know, is a very late developer and goes to a really shit university or whatever, and then they turn out to be a genius or something like that, right? That these kinds of things happen, or that they drop out and become a surfer. And there was the case, wasn't there? There was this guy. He dropped out and he did physics at school, dropped out, became a surfer dude, and then solved some amazing physics equations. Like, you know, these things do happen.
Or fail their 11 plus and then never do anything after that.
Oh, yeah. Well, that would be, I don't know who that is, because obviously my channel is quite big compared to yours.
My channel's bigger than yours.
It is. Fail 11 plus, fine. There's examples of that, or whatever. There's loads of things like that. But in general, they're true. And this is just facts. And we increasingly are told that it's unreasonable to live by stereotypes, and you should feel bad that you're prejudiced, and you should feel bad that you are engaging in stereotypes. I remember being at a meeting once, and this German girl said, "Well, what you're saying is a little bit stereotypical." And I felt like saying, "Yeah."
That's ironic. That's ironic, given that she's German and therefore fulfilling a stereotype in the very act of speaking without any sense of humour or irony.
And in the fact of being highly conformist to whatever the current thing is, which would at that point be to be against.
Was she goose-stepping towards you while she spoke?
She was, yes.
That's quite hot.
Could you tell us more?
Yeah. She couldn't just make it up. I don't fucking care. Just go slow.
Please,
Ed, tell me more.
I have no more other than I will be speaking in April in Germany, so that should be quite interesting.
Yeah, boy.
In English,
eine kleine Nachtmusik.
Not German. I don't speak German. I don't speak. Even if I could, I wouldn't. I did try to communicate in Dutch when I was in Germany.
Hot for Dommer.
That's good. That's goddammit. That used to be the rudest word in Dutch.
Hot for Dommer, cut five.
That's very good. How do you? How
what for Dommer?
How do you say that? So, the Netherlands.
You what?
What did he say?
How do you know so much Dutch?
I had a Dutch girlfriend.
Did you?
Yeah. She's from Utrecht.
Utrecht?
Yeah, spent a while though.
Did you?
Yeah. I also learned German swear words. Alte Schlobberfotze.
I don't know any German swear words. I could just say...
Well, if anyone's German in the chat, that is one of the most obscene things you can say in German.
Say it again.
Well, Alte Schlobberfotze.
Like that.
Klotzak.
Klotzak.
Yeah. I'm trying to think what that Swedish swear word is that sounds really ridiculous. It's their rudest word. It's something like fan.
Yeah, fun. A fun.
That's the rudest word.
I think it just means hell. And it's like, oh my God, that's appalling. How could you say that? Fun.
Well, in Dutch, Godverdomme is goddammit.
Yeah, goddammit. Did the Finnish have a phrase for being buggered by a reindeer or something?
Buggered by a reindeer? No.
You'd think they'd have something along those lines, though.
They don't. They're rude words.
They're very unimaginative, aren't they?
Artener. Pasca. That sort of thing.
Ed, some people think that I am not black.
Well, you are 25% white, aren't you? Are you 25%
well,
white?
Well, like, my great-grandmother was phenotypically white, and I have some other ancestors who were phenotypically white.
So let's say 20%.
Let's proceed carefully into this minefield. Go on, Lipton.
Yeah, people think I'm not black. Like, when I write, they say I'm not black. I'm pretending to be black.
So did your ancestors have sex in a minefield?
Oh, I don't know. But I do know that my great-granddad impregnated a girl who was pretty young.
Yes. Okay, cool.
Yeah. She was pretty young. They had three kids together.
And she was of legal age, and that is the end of that story.
Pretty young. So, anyway, she went to England. This lady, she went to England and she lived in England and had other children in England. But she's my half, her children are my half grand aunts and grand uncle. They're okay. Mm. They're pretty smart too. Very grandchildren are pretty smart.
Mm. I think we survived that.
When's a doctor in Boston?
Boston?
Yes.
In Lincolnshire?
No, in America.
Oh, right.
My half-grand-aunt, grandson.
Yeah, Kay Buckley is saying that Lipton is AI, which he's not. I've met him. I thought. Maybe he was AI. No, Lipton is not AI. Lipton is.
Somebody else said Lipton is 80% genetically blanket, which I think is.
That is, well, that is, as you can see, that it's like Orko from He-Man and the Masters of the Universe.
Could be like a wise shaman or something that we find somewhere to predict our futures, etc.
He's mainly So my solution. So we're saying stop and search. Then stop and search. Bring back stop and search. Profiling people appropriately, and then it's okay for people to carry kitchen knives on the railways. Is that pretty much what we're saying?
Well, I suppose any sort of, if you try and find like a policy based solution to this when people are doing chaotic random acts of violence, it's pretty hard not to come down on the side of totalitarianism, isn't it? It's pretty hard not to. That gives the government more powers. That gives the dopey police more
Richard,
powers.
Richard, you are wrong. Yet some years ago, I was reading a distinguished economist, Thomas Sowell, and he said that there was a point in American history when government officials had detailed information on the different cultural practices of different immigrants. So it's what you're saying is not impossible. We should just admit that some people, well, some groups, are more likely to be antisocial and treat them as such.
Sure, but in order to do that, you've got to expand police powers, which expands government powers, which offends my libertarianism. But I know I can see it's a problem, and I don't have a better solution other than, as a true libertarian, you'd say just arm everyone.
Except if you think about it, Richard, this government would employ 100,000 more police people, and those police officers would use their time very effectively looking at your tweets. And also, they would put 50,000 5-foot-tall women on trains who would become part of the victims. So
that's actually better for the public. So they're moving targets.
Yeah,
so they actually protect people,
or just jam up the aisles, and protect people.
I mean, that would be a realistic way of dealing with it. Would be to have people on trains who were guards, but they should actually have physical qualities that might be usefully associated with being guards
fat.
On a train. So, yeah, you
fat,
read the
morbidly obese. And no, Britain's got plenty of morbidly obese people. No, you have. Think about it, Ed. You have one morbidly obese guard per carriage, and if anything kicks off in a carriage, the morbidly obese person blocks the aisle.
Yes.
Well, that's solved. The rest of the train is safe. You don't think these things through.
But what about on those underground trains you have now, where there's one long carriage on, like, the District Line?
You'd have to use fat people as pretend brakes in the carriages.
They should do that. They should do that. Because one of the problems with those long trains on the District Line is on the shorter trains, you can open the windows between the trains and thus get like a draft if it's hot.
Yeah.
And on these ridiculous snaking trains on the District Line where it's just one long train, you can't do that. And also you can't escape to a different carriage in a dangerous situation than block the door. So if on the District Line you have a knifeman who goes crazy, then what can you do?
Have any of you ever been in a situation where you thought you're under genuine threat? And because I was like, this was, it's slightly embarrassing, except I don't have a shame gene, so it doesn't really bother me. But when I was studying in America, we went to Barbados for spring break, as you do, and they thought they saw a man ray. The Coast Guard shouted out the, what you call them, the safety guy. So everyone started running in, and I was out in the shallows. And I started, like, throwing young children behind me, old people, anyone, just to scramble over them to get to the safety of the beach. Because I was in a blind panic. There was a shark about to get me. So all this idea that, you know, if there was a fire and people do the right thing and look after the old and infirm, I know for a fact I'd just be throwing them into the fire. So
That is why we have training and disciplines and standard operational procedures so that doesn't happen.
Because I was, Paul, I was at Bird World in Farnham about 10 years ago, and there was an Asian hornet lying on the ground. Massive it was. And everyone was really scared. And I thought, I need to take charge here. So I went over and stomped on it.
Not exactly a shark, is it? Come on.
If you get stung by an Asian hornet, Paul, it can really hurt.
But it was already dying and on its back.
It was depressed. And after I stamped on it, its shed is obviously so thick, its exoskeleton, it's still breathing. So then I went and stamped on it again. Yeah. And it was absolutely huge. It couldn't have been anything other than an Asian hornet.
Your story's not
funny. You can be my hero, baby.
I have a funny story. You're my story. So
not telling funny stories, though. We're telling stories about being under physical threat and how we'd react. Explain.
So this lady, because you mentioned Barbados, so somebody told me that Prince Charles, when he was a prince, he went somewhere in the Caribbean, and a Jamaican woman, she went on the ship illegally because she said that she just wanted to give Prince Charles a little pussy.
And the link is...
It's just a funny story.
It's spot the link.
I think you've miscategorized that conversation a little bit, Lipton. It wasn't funny story time. It was when have you panicked under pressure time. That's a different category. And panic under pressure, the punchline is never pussy. It's never pussy. It's never the punchline. Or banani.
We're about halfway through. So to those that you are new, hello. Welcome to the Jolly Heretic. We are an online public house. It meets on Mondays at 7 p.m. UK time. 2 p.m. or I think it's currently 3 p.m. Clocks haven't changed yet. New York, in which we discuss based science, psychology, which we will in a minute because we're going to talk about Virginia Roberts, and stuff that generally interests us. If you are new, would you please, we often sort of deviate from the subject slightly. That's why there was Lipton's funny story there about the Jamaican pussy when we're supposed to be talking about the train stabbing. You know, the fact that like he was stabbed someone the previous day and was, you know, why the hell has this happened? Anyway, so if you're new, would you please subscribe? Could you subscribe here on YouTube and leave a like and hit the bell and all that bollocks? And subscribe to my Substack, that's jollyheretic.com, where I put all the most based science I can't put on YouTube, where I put in-person interviews, vlogs, films I make. I mean, if you like what I do, you could support me for the cost of a pint of beer. a month. Next to me is it says Rolf Shipman. That's because he looks like a combination of Rolf Harris and Harold Shipman. Also Jerry Adams. But that's his name's actually Dr. Paul Taylor, and so and he has a channel which is called Reads of the Lost Art. So please subscribe over there. And then you have Mr. Lipton Matthews there. He is not a ghost. He's actually a person that likes wrapping himself in a blanket and has a CGI background. His channel is Lipton Matthews, so please subscribe to that. Finally, we have Mr. Richard Grannan, and he has the Richard Grannan channel. And for the ladies. The Richard Grannan Philosophy channel for the men, people of more sort of cerebral capacity.
For the autistic men.
And then you're setting up a new channel, aren't you, Richard, about something or other? So then there's also yes. that. Yes. We have to do the interview on BPD birds, which I'm going to move on to in a minute.
What's the new channel, Richard? I forgot.
It's going to be for men, and it's men who are it's for the male victims of female narcissists, and that will start up soon. And Ed's going to be the first person I interview for that channel.
That makes sense.
Is a victim of female narcissism?
No, yes. But he understands the topic.
No, Ed is a female narcessist.
I've also been a victim of them a bit, yes. Yeah.
You enjoyed it.
Well, that's the thing, you do. That's the thing. It's like a roller coaster that gets a bit too dangerous. Like you're enjoying it, and suddenly, it's a bit too much. And you've got to be careful. Ed is a failed narcissist. Now, what is a failed narcissist?
It's a collapsed narcissist. It's essentially what a borderline is, according to Otto Kernberg. It's somebody who reaches for the grandiosity of the narcissistic shell but fails to attain it, so they collapse and they become borderline.
Is that because Ed gets distracted by the tism just as he's about to reach full narcissistic explosive mode? Wandering into the corner of a room looking for a book.
Is that because I suppose you think about it, Richard, borderlines, they kind of oscillate between narcissism and collapse, don't they? Whereas presumably though, sometimes narcissists, full-blown narcissists, grandiose narcissists do collapse, though sometimes.
I point you to our last conversation, which is where vulnerable narcissism is not detailed enough and expanded enough. And if it were, an awful lot of people who get called BPD would actually be, in fact, found to be fragile narcissists.
But does Ed qualify as a collapsed narcissist? Because he does have a rectal prolapse, he told me. Is that not right, Ed?
I have a new pocket.
You're confusing me with Jim, the toilet cleaner at Edinburgh University from your university days. Poor Jim. Whatever came of him or came into him.
He had to keep his bucket close.
He had to keep his bucket close and his sponge closer. Poor Jim.
Fucking hell.
And that was the 80s as well. There was AIDS to worry about. Legend. Anyway, sorry, Richard, what were you going to say?
I wrote a new pocket book. It's titled How to Win in the Real World, and it was specifically written for Paul.
Is he dedicated to Paul? Does it say?
Specifically written for him. Because Paul is a winner.
We have a resident poet here at the Jolly Heretic Public House, Mr. Quinn. And he has written the following poem in honour of tonight's discussion. John Major, who saw opportunity, came up with care in the community. John Major, who saw opportunity, came up with care in the community. It's sadly insane. And now on the train, Rome nutters with utter impunity. Thank you very much, Mr. Quinn. And,
very good. You
should buy Mr. Quinn's book of Jolly Heretic Poetry, which is available on the old Amazon. One of the things the tism is doing at the moment is making me it makes you strongly in favour of sort of justice and order and structure, and thus I don't like the treatment of Prince Andrew. I think even if he is, and he is, as the book entitled reveals, a thoroughly filthy fellow and a narcissist and just ghastly, just a horrible guy, right? I think legal process, Kay Buckley, exactly. You don't punish somebody and deprive them of things without legal process. And you certainly don't take away a war medal.
Oh, God, wait there, Ed. You sounded like one of these human rights lawyers. Everything's about process. In the good old days, he would have been lynched by his royal whatever.
No,
and everyone moves on. What?
No,
my position on the Prince Andrew issue is a bit different. I'm a Puritan. I'm really religious. But let's be realistic. Prince Andrew did not walk around London looking for random girls to rape. He has daughters. I have not heard any of his... I have not heard any of the friends of his daughters accuse him of rape. So we know the reality. The girls who were procured by the Epstein team, they were unfortunate girls. It's really unfortunate what happened to them. But
there's no fucking way you're going to defend being a nonce.
No, I am not.
I am not defending fucking nonces.
This is Lipton Matthews with the Weekly Nonce Show.
No, I'm not defending them. What I'm saying is that parents should be more responsible. If parents are responsible,
What are you saying?
No, let me tell you what I'm saying.
Girls' fault for being
no, it's not your fault. I'm saying these were vulnerable girls. They were vulnerable girls. They're what we would call force ripe in Jamaica, and some of those
you call them what?
Forced ripe girls. Girls who are primed for sex. So some girls from very early, their parents trained them.
Richard, if you mishear something, take it as a blessing. Don't ask.
So I'm a Puritan. I'm really religious, but let's be realistic. If you're not a careful parent, your daughter will become a vulnerable girl.
Royal rights for nonces.
That's all I can hear. That's all I hear. No, I think if you've got to draw a heart, like, let's not engage in the degeneracy of the left and engage in moral relativism. That has to be a hard boundary here. If you're touching kids, you go in the bin.
No, according to Ed, we need proper legal process. You need endless appeals. And at the end of it, you go off to an island somewhere.
Wait there.
He hasn't been sentenced to prison. You're talking about legal process. It's perfectly within the rights of the royal family to say, bugger off, we think you've disgraced us. What criminal action has been taken against him without legal process? Yeah, he's just been disgraced. He hasn't been prosecuted or anything.
Well, he's been stripped of his rank.
But that's not legal. That's about Ponzi royal privilege and all that type of stuff, which isn't part of the legal process.
He's got no legal right to his titles. That was the Prince Harry argument, wasn't it?
The royals don't have any legal right to claim royal status, so why they should be protected by the law in this instance?
Don't bring that Scouse element into it. There'll be a proper round.
That's
not fair.
There's nothing, as far as I can see, there's nothing in the 1970s.
How old was Virginia, Ed? You're the expert.
Sorry?
How old was she, Virginia?
He was 17, so he had sex
when
with
she
her.
When she met Andrew?
Yes. So he had sex with her in England, so she says. Of course, that was legal.
What's the age of consent in England?
16.
Okay, and she was 17.
Yeah, but then she had sex with him in New York, where the age of sexual consent is 18.
But the age of consent in many places is 16. Jamaica is 16. 16 is a relatively decent age to have your first sexual experience.
If we were all housed on the same wing, let's say we all get arrested and we're housed with Prince Andrew, you're going to sit with him and eat with him, are you?
Lipton would be on the non-swing.
No, I wouldn't. I wouldn't.
Would you object to me filling him in?
No, you shouldn't be on the non-swing because I got talking to this guy in a pub in Leiden in the Netherlands years ago, a Glaswegian guy, and he was saying that he was, because his crime was quite minor, so he was in the kitchen. He got kitchen duty, which is like quite a perk. And they would know, they knew what the non-swing was. There was a non-swing. And they had to be separated from the rest of the prisoners because the prisoners would obviously all project their own insecurities onto these nonces, even though they're all criminals.
Defending nonces,
I'm just saying why is that criminals in prison have such a problem with nonces.
Anyway, Ed, you've evaded answering the question about...
And
you're asking...
They put like fingernails in it and food and...
Yeah. You're asking for Prince Andrew to be protected by legal process in a non-legalistic... context.
You know, titles and whatever are a legal matter. That's why there had to be an Act of Parliament so that Tony Benn could disclaim his peerage.
My understanding was it's the King's privilege.
No,
the King
no,
doesn't
not.
Have to go
no,
to Parliament.
Isn't. No, it isn't. That stopped. There's certain titles that can be given out purely by the King. Otherwise, they're given out by the monarch in discussion with his ministers.
If that was true, why doesn't Andrew sue?
Because he's obviously, he knows.
Why doesn't he say, I want my title as Prince Nonce to be protected?
Because if he's got any sense, he would realise that, forget the Virginia Roberts thing, he has lied, and he's lied continuously, and he's lied, or was it continually, and he's lied about his relationship with Jeffrey Epstein, and this has kept coming to light, and he has absolutely disgraced the royal family. And obviously the turning point, I mean, I don't know who this guy is, but was the guy...
Ed, you're evading again. What's this got to do with legal process that you demand for him?
Yeah, I think that if he took the king to court over this, he'd have quite a good case, particularly about the prince thing. Because if you look at the Acts of Parliament that confirm who it is that gets to call themselves prince, it is very clear...
Or formerly known as prince.
Yes, it is very clear that it is the sons...
Squiggle.
It's the children and grandchildren in the male line of the monarch. That's who gets to call themselves prince or princess, and that's it. And there's nothing in the act which states that the monarch has the right to take this away. This is just like a guaranteed thing. Where there are other acts of parliament which state that the monarch can take things away and whatever. There's nothing about prince. A prince is inherently the son or grandchild in the male line of the monarch. That's what a prince is.
All right, so can rephrase? We're going to get there in the end, Ed. You keep deflecting. But would you accept that in the present cultural climate we have, there is an excessive reliance upon procedure, process, and the law for its own sake, and natural justice is going ever and ever further into the distance? And I'd suggest it's obvious that Andrew is a nonce, and the fact that people are defending him either legalistically or hypothetically, it's just wrong.
I agree. Nonsense is wrong. But another question for Ed, since you're the expert on Epstein, what's the average age of his victim? What's the average age of the average victim? 15, 16, 17, or old?
I don't know.
That's an important question.
I think they were all about 17, 18, something like
but
that.
But those are relatively big ages.
Are you saying old ages or big ages?
Yeah, they're old. The age of consent in Jamaica is 16. The age of consent in England is 17.
Dude. You don't work with kids. You need to be around a 17 or an 18-year-old. Yes.
I don't think he does, Richard.
Actually,
keep them away.
Scratch that. My cousin just had her 18th, and I just hung around with all these kids her age. They are babies. They are babies. They're really, really...
A good point. That's a genuinely good point, then. Why on earth is it legal for these people to have... If society thinks that it is unacceptable for people to have children at 16, which it clearly does, then why, or even 18, then why the hell is it legal to have sex at 18?
Exactly.
Because we have don't we have this principle in English law that goes back fucking hundreds of years where we made the right of the human being to make their own decisions for themselves very central and very powerful, and wasn't that the weighing factor in saying okay, it's 16 if you're also having sex with a young person, but it's 18 if you're having sex with an older person. I don't think the age of consent is just 16. In the UK, I don't think it works
it is.
Like that.
No, it is. The age of sex consent is 16. It's not. Are
you saying in the UK a 60-year-old can have sex with a 16-year-old without legal consequence?
Yes, absolutely. There are countries where the law is more nuanced than that. There are countries, I think like Japan, for example, the age of sex consent is 14, but the age difference has to be a certain amount for it to be legal. And if it's beyond that, it's not legal. But no, in England, there's laws about, there didn't used to be, there's laws about like a school teacher having sex with the person.
Yeah, positions of authority, authority.
In the last 20 years, they've brought that in. And the borderline is 18 or whatever. But no, I would say, you know, is 18 too old? I mean, too young. I mean, you're right. 18-year-olds, they're basically children.
They're very young. It's very young. I mean, if we say by American standards, what's the age for alcohol in America? Is it 21?
21.
I think it should be.
Most states, 21. Yeah.
Okay, I think probably we should say for there to be sex without any question, it's 21. Anyone under under that age, it can be questionable. They're so young at 17, 18. It would be so easy to trick people that age into doing things that they really, really don't understand what they're doing. The only question here from the psychological point of view is what is the degree of vulnerability? The neuroplasticity is extremely high at that age. When you're talking about girls at that age, the primary thing they care about is social status and fitting in with the group. Can any of us conceive as like middle-aged and above men of how you could create a situation where the girls in the group would wish to conform to that? It's very easy, which means you have a fundamentally asymmetric power dynamic, and that's where the protection really needs to step in. I know what you're saying, but like if they were generally 18, it's still too young. Still too young.
I agree. And also, if we go back to what we were discussing, Richard, on WhatsApp, the thing is with this girl, is she's obviously from, they tell she's, oh, her brother, by the way, called something like Skyrocket or something ridiculous, said, oh, this ordinary American girl has taken down a prince. No, she's not an ordinary American girl. She's from a very abusive background, okay, in which her mother used to beat her with twigs covered in thorns for wetting the bed.
I thought you said you didn't believe her biography.
Well, are she saying that's the case? I don't.
Yeah, but last week you said that was all a load of nonsense.
That's the point that I was going to come on to, Paul. if her biography is factually accurate, which it conspicuously, it's absurd. It can't be. We know she's lied about this bath thing with Prince Andrew for a start. We know that the bath's far too small.
Well, I think I refuted that last week.
In a silly way, yeah. But in a serious way, she did.
Who made you? Wait there before you carry on. Who made you the bath police? You just like, arbitrarily decided that because it was a small bath, two adults couldn't fit in it.
My parents' neighbour that used to come around and bathe me made me the bath police. Anyway,
did you play the periscope game?
No. Yeah, but we had quite a big bath, so he used to like to come in with me. But anyway,
it's more fun in a small bath. I just think you're a bath Puritan.
Yes, with Nanny Lowe, it was one small bath, wasn't it? Because they have that in
for the whole family.
The whole family in there, yeah. But anyway, look, so she's obviously exaggerating things. Otherwise, she is like the biggest victim in the history of the universe. And we know that she sued people before Prince Andrew. She sued people before Andrew, other men for whatever, and they settle out of court and so on. So I think it's not inconsistent to say that he did know her. He did know her. Clearly, there's a photograph that proves that. But he didn't necessarily know her in the biblical sense. And we can't be sure of her testimony because we know that she exaggerates things and lies and it doesn't make any sense. Oh, yeah, my mum was totally abusive to me and my dad was totally abusive to me, but I was still in touch with them. It doesn't make any sense.
To resolve the problem, we should just have an age of consent that's, let's say, around 18. So at 18, you're an adult. At 18, you can vote. So at 18, you should start having sex. Because if the age of consent is 17 or 16 in many places, then if an older man, despite the power dynamics, if he sleeps with a girl who's 17 or 16, legally, I can see the moral problem, but legally it's not a great problem in many places. So if we're going to have this conversation, it's best to have an age of consent that's around 18.
Right, but Lipton, that's going off topic. What I was focusing on was the fact that then they get abused, right, these people, and their parents are abusive. If she's to be believed, her parents sent her to a home for naughty children where she was like beaten up and God knows what there. and then this kind of causes them to tell lies. This sets them up to tell lies, to get out of being abused and to be fantasists to cope with the abuse. And so you get this terrible situation where she might be telling the truth, as we were discussing with Richard. She might be telling the truth about a lot of this stuff. But how can you know? And that's terrible. It's like the boy that cried wolf, except it's the girl that cried abuse. You just can't know.
In a psychotherapeutic context, you would accept that with a client. You'd say, well, they're very emotionally dysregulated. They probably were targeted for some kind of sexual abuse, and that's led them to be very histrionic, emotionally dysregulated. Their perceptions are warped. They have PTSD. They have memory gaps. And then they may become very attached to attention and sympathy in a way that incentivizes confabulation and, frankly, pathological lying. And that, in the psychotherapeutic sense, you go, okay, I accept that my client is drawing outside the lines, but legally there's nothing they can do for them, because if you're caught lying and a jury of your peers no longer finds you a credible witness, you're a little bit fucked, aren't you?
Right, and that's kind of what she is. And also, and the fact that she's now killed herself, only evidence, she's got young children, for God's sake, and she's killed herself, only evidences her extreme instability. And the things that she said in that biography, as I said last week, Richard, she makes an accusation against a senior psychologist. And it's obvious to me who that person is. And I think that's just disgraceful. Sure it's not true as well. And it's disgraceful. And then this woman, we've allowed this crazy woman, this confabulist, this liar, to attack the royal family. And yes, I know, I take a peculiar interest in this. It's the tism, I guess. I've read all the books that relate to it. I've read now 3 books about this. He's appalling. I mean, Andrew is absolutely awful. And he takes even though he's only a minor royal, he takes all the deference. He really loves it.
Right. So what comes after the but?
Well, I don't.
Paul, leave the poor nonce. Do you know how hard it is to be a royal?
Honestly, I didn't know Ed ran. I didn't know Ed ran the International Nonce Defence League. I'm just fascinated by where this is going.
There are some stresses that can only be relieved by coerced sexual contact, Paul. I think you have to show compassion to our elites. They don't want to do this. They have to. You just open your heart.
They can't. I mean, one of the things that's quite interesting about their situation is that you have, who is it that becomes super elite, right? Basically, it's highly intelligent psychopaths and people that are born into it. And it's much harder to lose a fortune than to gain one. It's much more difficult.
It's much harder or much easier?
It's much harder to win, to gain a fortune, to go from not much to being super rich, right? That takes a certain kind of psychopathic kind of personality, and it takes high intelligence. But the law of diminishing returns means that someone like Prince Andrew or Sarah Ferguson, they probably have an intelligent ancestor somewhere way back who got the fortune.
But they're
a bit thick. And as I say, it's much harder to lose a fortune than it is to gain a fortune. So you've got to be really ridiculously stupid to lose a fortune. You know, all you've got to do is, if you've got a load of money, is just sort of put it in the...
Ed, have you taken any ketamine tonight? Because you're taking forever to get to the point, and I'm still not sure what the point is.
Richard looked confused. So my point is...
I'm confused because you're on a ketamine. You're on a ketamine low, and you're not making any sense.
No. My only experience of ketamine was watching other people take it and then watching them vomit and pass out and thinking, I better not take that, in Durham University Gardens.
I've listened to ketamine-addled arguments that have gone quicker than this, so can you get to the point?
My point is that then you get these crazy psychopaths, these highly intelligent psychopaths like Jeffrey Epstein, that end up in the same social circles as basically quite stupid people.
And?
Who are easily impressed by wealth, and then those people kind of do stupid things. Well, that's my point.
It wasn't a very good one.
So... Do you agree that Epstein was a Mossad agent whose main objective was to get compromising material on wealthy, high-leverage elite people? But it looks like it.
Steve Saylor said that he knew somebody who knew Epstein, and the person didn't believe that Epstein was Mossad, and then the person changes his mind. But I really don't know.
I mean, he seems to have come out of nowhere, and he's not exactly. really got expert. He's not got expertise in anything he claims expertise in.
He's just a he's good at mathematics, but he was never. Apparently, he worked in education. He was a teacher.
A school teacher, yeah.
Yes, he was a school teacher, and over time, he became this investor. But I know quite a bit about the investing market in America, and I don't know what he did. And
for what it's worth, Eric Weinstein said he wasn't good at mathematics. That was like the myth. But when he's for what it's worth, because I don't know how trustworthy Eric is, but that's what he said. He said the myth was that he was great at mathematics. He wasn't. He wasn't. So he looks and acts like an agent. I mean, what else could he possibly fucking be? He dedicated his life to one thing, which was to the skill of getting highly wealthy people to get into compromising situations. And it didn't have to be illegal. It doesn't have to be technically illegal. It just needs to be something that you would rather the general public didn't know about you doing or saying. And I think that was his whole thing for years, his whole shtick. He's Mossad. He's working for the Zionists who you love.
How many people are watching, Ed?
It was 2,200, but it's gone down to 1,979 because of all this Mossad stuff.
That's the Jews that have turned off. I mean, Zionists. Sorry,
you know, sorry. Ed, I think
you mean Israelites.
Israelites.
Ed, I don't think that the world is ready for this show yet.
I agree. No.
As we discussed,
I don't think I'm ready
week,
for this show.
I'm not fucking ready for it.
I'm not ready. I've been doing this show for ages. I'm not ready. It just sort of happened randomly, didn't it? It was this weird concatenation.
Can you imagine if we were on TV?
We wouldn't be on for long. I'll tell you that much, mate.
We would be on Question Time, and then Fiona Bruce would go, sorry, what did you say? What? Oh my God. And then she'd get very upset.
Continuously is when it happens without pause. Continually is when it happens and then stops and happens again.
Yeah. Okay. Well, then continuously. We have a question from Gareth Goth Bureaucrat. In the context of train stabbing, why is East of England so revolutionary? Boadicea, Herod the Wake, Cromwell, Thatcher, strong Brexit vote. You talk about Boadicea, so I can't comment on that. But the other examples you gave, the East of England is overwhelmingly Saxon, and so it's genetically Saxon. So it's much more weird, as it were, whereas the west of England is a Saxon Celtic clime. So there's a clear genetic difference between the two groups. And then if you look at America, the northern states, they were settled by the Saxons, and that's the more kind of revolutionary, you know, social justice kind of people. And the southern states, they were settled by the Saxo-Celtic clime and simply the Celts from Ulster. And so there's a genetic difference between them. So I wonder if that's what's relevant. But there's probably more to it than that, because the examples you've given don't seem particularly related. I mean, Cromwell, left wing. Herod the Wake, I don't know if I call him left wing. And Boadicea just was Celtic, because everybody was Celtic. So there was no Saxons. So Boadicea, different thing. Boadicea, separate. And the Brexit vote, I don't know if that's statistically true. The East of England includes all kinds of places that didn't vote Brexit. I can't comment on that, but that would be my theory. Paul, what do you think?
It was the weather.
The weather, yeah. Paul, the weather, which doesn't make any sense, because the examples you've given, I mean, for example, Boadicea, that's the Roman warm period. Herod, that's the medieval warm period. So I don't know.
Yeah, on the West Coast, you have your brain addled, you have webbed feet, and generally you're soaked to the skin and pissed off all the time.
West Coast, what are you talking about? Webbed feet? I thought that was just us on the Wirral.
No, West Coast of Britain gets a lot more rain than the East Coast.
I
struggle to believe that hasn't got a profound contributory factor to the question.
Ed, have you ever interviewed Rudyard Lynch?
No.
Are you going to?
I don't know, maybe. Why?
I'd like it if you did. It would be nice. He produces good stuff.
Yeah, but he doesn't like. He got upset about my Bowden biography. Oh. He said I destroyed the Bowden magic. But I think I might have met him. I think he's from the Channel Islands. And I met a load of people from the Channel Islands called the and they called themselves the Based Beans. And I think he was one of them. So
he's an American kid though, isn't he?
No. Oh, Rudyard Lynch. Sorry, I've got mixed up. Yeah. Yes, I have interviewed Rudyard Lynch. Yes.
Okay. Where can I see that?
On my Substack.
Okay.
Or I can just find it for you and send it to you. But yeah, I have interviewed Rudyard Lynch. I got confused. I thought you were talking about somebody. Like, who's that guy that does the thing, history?
Rudyard Kipling.
Rudyard Kipling. Oh, by the way, Richard, look what I got. I went to Rudyard Kipling's house.
Oh, yeah.
And I got his complete poetic works. There you go.
Oh, lovely. That's nice.
Aiden, are you going to talk about Nick Fuentes and Tucker Carlson?
Oh.
Now there are two men in the world.
I don't like Nick Fuentes.
I had him on my channel. He was very nice.
Yeah, I don't like Nick Fuentes. I think he's discrediting the right.
Is that available on your Substack as well? I'd like to watch that as well.
Yes, there's loads on my Substack. There's loads of stuff. That's
I better subscribe. And so should everyone watching.
Science Substack in the world.
Is it?
Yes.
Ed makes exceedingly good podcasts.
I do. But then part of it is I have a good crew. You've got to have a good crew. A good posse. Oh, someone's saying, sorry, Lipton, wait a minute. Duck Egg 618 says, hi, Ed, advice for Patriot's sons looking after Mama. I don't understand. What does he mean?
I don't know.
Patriot's sons.
Listen, folks, it's very solipsistic of you to just spurt out a question without thinking about the human beings that have to fucking receive it. Can you put a bit of thought into it? We appreciate the £3.99 you've just sent Ed. But could you fucking think it through? Mouth it to yourself before
Richard,
you send it.
Customers. Richard, these people are customers.
Richard, they're probably thinking, would it really do us any ill service if the four of us put some thought into the things we said?
We're doing it for free.
That's why the banter works, because we don't put any thought whatsoever into anything we say. I just come up with a vague topic and we... Anyway, Antaxaraxia A says Brits can't have guns. What about carrying swords? A black belt barrister tells me that a sword is a bladed article. You can't go around carrying a sword.
You can carry Deep Heat, though, which is a good spray that has cheap neurotoxins in it and will blind people. And if the officer says, why have you got Deep Heat? You go, oh, my shoulder's been doing me head in.
Can you carry spray glue?
Probably, yeah. Well, you'd have to justify it. If you've got intent, then no. But if you've got a reason, you can carry a rounders bat if you love to play rounders.
Yeah, with your mates at the park. I carry a walking stick with a very sharp tip because you might slip in the snow.
Mm.
I have such a walking stick. Well, I don't. My friend Lee has it. I lent it to him years ago. But like a Finnish walking stick, and then on the bottom there's a very sharp metal tip so you don't slip over in the snow. And like you can carry an orange and then a knife to peel it with. Mm. Yeah.
But it has to be under 4 inches, doesn't it, in the UK?
Yes, but you can do that. I did that during the 2011
riots. Save.
with my knife. Yeah, but we were talking about your erection. Now, Delta Trosper 125 says, do you think that West Country people have similar accents to those in Suffolk, Essex? A little bit, didn't they? A little bit. I was in Shropshire recently, and a lot of people there, I was surprised by this, because you think Shropshire, Midlands, but they have country accents like you'd have in Gloucestershire.
Really?
Yeah. I was in Shrewsbury specifically. And you had these people who was... I was interviewing Nick Griffin and met up with him in a pub in Shrewsbury. Nice. And I was surprised by the accent. A goth bureaucrat says, why do some bad parents never cross line from emotional abuse to physical or physical to sexual? Why do some bad parents never cross the line from emotional abuse to physical or physical to sexual? Well, presumably they're just less bad.
They're not psychopaths. They're not mentally unstable. They're just inept at parenting.
So the less level of bad, isn't it? I mean, like, if you emotionally abuse your child, that's probably not as bad as physically abusing them. And if you physically abuse them, that's probably not as bad as sexually abusing them, isn't it? So I just assume they're just less bad. It's
Richard, you're so rich and famous. When are we going to go to the University of Liverpool?
I don't mind bringing all the lads together against Liverpool podcast studio and doing
not to the university to give a lecture.
I know, but you want to argue with students, and we know somebody who got topped doing that recently, and so I'm a bit scared by Mossad. But we could. You want to argue with the students at Liverpool?
Yeah, I'm going to say no preparations. Ed will talk about race and IQ. Paul will talk about the lack of consequences, and you will talk about narcissism.
All my friends at Liverpool University I know through Salsa and Batata, and that is a very mixed group of very progressive young people. I wouldn't have any friends left to dance with after that. I'm not fucking doing it.
Oh, what if we do it at Liverpool Hope University?
Oh, fair enough. Fuck them, they're not smart.
We'd have to use very short words.
We'd have to mime it. No reparations, and that means we're not giving money back. Do you understand me? Like, we're not doing it.
Liverpool Hope University had a nice building, didn't it? It had a nice building. Isn't there a third one? It's Liverpool Hope. John Moores. Yeah. Which is more rubbish, Hope or John Moores?
Hope.
I don't.
Right.
John Moores is good for some subjects. John Moores is very good for some subjects.
From memory, Ed, I might be wrong, but Liverpool Hope used to be basically a teacher training college, and then when everything, like, you know, petrol stations started being called universities, it claimed the status.
Petrol station. What is it? Yeah,
there's now three universities in Leeds. I knew there were two. I knew there was Leeds University and Leeds Metropolitan University.
Yeah, I think it's Leeds Beckett.
Yeah, Leeds Beckett. Yeah, but there's another one. It's like Leeds something else.
I've forgotten. There's
two. Yeah, there's like Leeds.
No, you're right. Like, there's three.
Yeah. And in York, there's York University and York some bollocks University. Right. Stop interrupting, you scouse twat, says Multi Balzac. Thank you very much, Charles.
I said scrub your nan. What did I say? You humorless twunt.
Yeah. Cambridge Ring Road University, says Balzac. Yeah, exactly. Yes, there's a lot of pointless universities out there offering completely pointless degrees, which no one takes seriously, and I've never understood. I mean, the silliest thing to do is to do a humanities subject, which you don't have to be that clever to do, at a bad university. That's the really silly
thing.
Psychology is a social science, and Aston is not that bad. But I'm thinking, if you do, like, English literature at De Montfort University, that's completely pointless. I mean, doing a practical, sensible degree at De Montfort, like, I don't know, pharmacology, fair enough. But it's just, you're just being silly, aren't you?
I'm devastated we've only got 7 minutes left before we've got Paul on his rant about how these universities are all just turning into money-grabbing diploma mills run by technocrats. I only found out last week that you've been using the term technocrat for 2 years, and I didn't actually fucking know what it meant. I only found out last week that, like, I looked up the meaning, like, what is a technocrat? And I was like, oh, I didn't even know that that was the definition of the word, what he was using. So you're talking and I'm nodding along going, yeah, the technocrat. I didn't know what it was because I'm the thick one.
Ed nods at me quite a lot, don't you, Ed?
So what?
See? You nod a lot.
Yeah, well, I just sort of, what's the point of interrupting? He's in full scouse mode. Just, you know, let him go on about toffee men and whatever the hell.
Ed,
you know.
I have a question for you, Ed, because they're so smart.
Having an outside Lou as a kid.
I have a question for Ed, because Ed is so smart. Ed, how come I am black? So how come I'm not a rich, famous right-wing influencer like everybody else, like Candace Owens?
You're not media trained. You're not slick. We love you. You're very clever, but you're not slick.
You're too based. You don't understand yet what subjects to leave alone. That's one thing. Goth bureaucrat says, "What job would you like if you could have any?"
Can I answer? I would like to be Sydney Sweeney's bicycle seat.
You know, there was that guy in Coronation Street years ago, and the character was a vicar. and he became the boyfriend of Emily, you know, Emily out of Coronation Street, Emily Bishop, right? And then he quickly had to leave Coronation Street. And the plot they wrote in was though he was too religious and he couldn't go out with her or some shit. But in reality, the actor was going around sniffing bicycle seats.
Sniffing them.
That's disgusting. I never said I wanted to sniff the seat.
No, you also wanted to be the seat.
Yeah, that's completely different.
Like Prince Charles wanting to be the Tampax of Camilla Parker Bowles. He didn't want to sniff it. He just wanted to be the Tampax.
Are you comparing Sydney Sweeney to Camilla Parker Bowles?
in the sense of people
in any shape or form, they're not even in the same genus.
In the sense of people wanting to be things that go up a twat, then yeah. Yeah. Well, it's just what you said you wanted to be. Let's hope that.
All right, can I ask you a direct question, Ed?
Let's hope, Paul. It's not too oniony down there. Sorry,
Ed,
you know what?
Would you like to be Sydney Sweeney's bicycle seat? Would you refuse that job?
Bicycle seat.
Would you?
I would certainly hope that the two of us had a competitive interview process. We would submit our cover letters, our CVs.
What about
one of those annoying lunches that you have with the other candidates where you have to tend to film with them? You know?
The most beautiful woman in the world is a lady who was once the president of Me Too.
Ed, we can apply to be a tandem.
Who's the black lady, Lipton?
She's really beautiful, the president of Me Too.
We'd have to work together every day, and I could imagine that would be quite stressful.
But poor Sydney, it would be.
Why?
You two fuckers bicker all the time.
An hour and a half. But imagine doing it.
Ed, I'm really hurt.
I don't know.
Cut me to the quick.
I don't know what job I would do. I've often thought I trained. Whose bicycle seat would you all like to be? Says Goth Bureaucrat. Okay, well, we've got Sydney Sweeney, and Lipton, presumably Anne Widdecombe.
Yeah. And Richard would be your bicycle seat because he always simps for you when we have a disagreement.
Who? For Ed?
Yeah. You're his bicycle seat.
Lipton, were you making a joke about the Me Too president? Because what I'm saying is not.
She's really beautiful, and I wasn't joking. I was serious.
we can discuss this perhaps off air. Now, whose bicycle seat am I being? Do you a Lippers, isn't it? What?
Whose bicycle seat would you be, Richard?
Well, I'd take his other. I'd take Rolf Shipman's other lady that he likes, Dua Lipa, because she's Albanian. And
no, who's the Georgian one? Katie Mellower. Oh, ding dong. Oh,
fuck, sorry, Katie Mellower. Yes, I'm sorry, Katie Mellower, yes.
Oh,
I wouldn't, no. It's disgusting.
And she wrote a song, didn't she write a song about all those bicycles in Beijing? So it's all making sense now, it's the Illuminati. She wrote that song, didn't she? A million bicycles in Beijing or something?
My question is, have we helped people make sense of a chaotic world today, and have we made them feel lighter, happier, and more optimistic?
I think there's no question about it that we have, because we have combined both intelligent analysis with humour, and that allows people to imbibe and absorb information and to better process it. And so they've. I think we can. Yeah, I mean, someone with some long name involving the word Impala has said yes, they have. Joe MQ4 said Peter Segi feels much better.
That's good. We've brought light into the world. We've brought spiritual guidance, even perhaps. I might.
Yes,
say.
We have brought light into a world of darkness. And
why don't you start a cult?
I'm sorry?
Start a cult.
A cult.
Yes.
Yes, I remember speaking, interviewing a chap called Andrew Gold, and he told me that when he started his YouTube channel, there was some training video, and his YouTube channel is huge because he gets like Liz Truss on, it tells you to basically operate like a cult. There is some truth. I did, yes.
Okay. Ed, some of your followers are quite culty.
They defend me against my
mostly, but come on,
in that sense, yeah, they're loyal to their landlord.
The Tism Army,
yeah, the Taint Squad, as they're otherwise known, and they're loyal. They're loyal to the landlord, who's guided them these past 6 years through some very turbulent times. In that sense, yeah, I suppose so. Good. Well, I think I'm going to leave this up because Lipton hasn't done anything that bad this week. I would say thank you, everybody, and thank you for tuning in. And we will see you all next week when there'll presumably be another dramatic event in the Civil War that we can talk about. It's funny how back when I used to have Woodley on with me, there weren't that many dramatic events, at least not at first. And we would just talk about vague subjects. Mm. And then now there's just something every single week. So
is that down to the demographics? No, it couldn't be.
I don't know what change has happened. Something's happened there. All right, tally-ho, chaps, and see you soon. And goodbye.
Goodbye.